Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Former US First Lady Laura Bush has added her criticism to the splitting up of families entering America illegally. It follows Melania Trump entering the political debate over the separation and detention of children from their parents on the US southern border. The First Lady's office released a statement saying the country should be governed not only by laws, but by the heart. In Washington, FSN's Kevin McAleese.
It's rare for this First Lady to wade into the political agenda set by her husband, but in a brief statement, Melania was said to be empathetic towards the families affected by the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy at the border, which sees parents charged and children placed in detention centres. Nearly 200 children have been separated from their parents or guardians over the last 6 weeks. Democrats have slammed the policy as child abuse and inhumane. Trump claims the families are being broken up due to a law introduced by the Democrats. However, critics argue Trump has the authority to end the separations at any time.
Australia's Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull is beginning negotiations for a new trade deal with the European Union. Europe's negotiations with Australia come as the EU is about to adopt €2.8 billion worth of tariffs on US products. Kevin Ozebeck reports from Brussels.
Ahead of her meeting with Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, European Commissioner for Trade Cecilia Malmström says she looks forward to adding Australia as a free trade partner. In what Malmström calls challenging times, she says it's heartening that Australia shares a commitment to free trade. Their meeting comes as the U.S. is slapping tariffs on European steel and aluminum. The European Commission still needs to adopt the retaliatory tariffs, but they are expected to be in place by next month.
India is striving to become a $5 trillion economy by 2025, according to the country's president. That's double the current size of India's economy, which is the third largest in Asia. Rebecca Bunden reports from Mumbai.
India's president Ramnath Kovind, addressing the Indian community in Athens during a three-nation tour, said that India is working towards becoming the third largest consumer market in the world by 2025 and a $5 trillion economy. India is the world's fastest growing major economy, as GDP growth gathered pace to 7.7% in the quarter between January to March, according to recent official data. Growth had previously slowed because of the impact of demonetization and a new goods and services tax. Rebecca Bunden, Mumbai.
Meghan Markle's father says she cried when he told her he couldn't come to her wedding. Thomas Markle says he's upset by the fact he was a footnote to her marriage to Prince Harry last month. In an exclusive interview with ITV's Good Morning Britain, he said it was difficult telling his daughter he couldn't travel to the UK.
They were disappointed, but they both said, and Meghan cried, I'm sure, but she did cry, and they both said, take care of yourself, we're really worried about you. So they said the important thing was that I get better.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett there. Welcome to Monday's Richie Allen Show. It's the 18th of June, 2018. My name is Richie Allen. Good to be with you. Always good to be with you. Let's get on with the programme. Tweet me right now. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, tweet the program at Richie Allen Show. You can email it as well, richie@richieallen.co.uk. Best to tweet me during the live show. News roundup coming up in the next few minutes. But later this hour, I'm going to be joined by Shane Gibbs. I mentioned Shane last week that he would be on the programme. He founded TITV, which is Targeted Individual TV Television. Targeted Individual Television. Now, he set the channel up to let targeted individuals here in this country record their testimonies and their experiences of targeting. We've heard this on the programme before, but not quite like what Shane is going to tell me a bit later on. Tens of thousands of people around the world believe, are convinced that their governments are using implanted chips and weapons, sophisticated weapons against them, to stalk them and harass them. The medical fraternity says, well, it's in their minds. It's a form of psychosis. I'm not so sure that it is. Shane Gibbs joins the programme a little bit later on, and we'll have an extended chat with Shane, and he will tell us about his own experiences. That's going to be very interesting. In fact, I've got a pretty interesting lineup of guests for you this coming week on Your Richie Allen Show, live on Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio, TriggerWarning.tv, and RichieAllen.co.uk. Thanks for not watching the football. Or maybe you are. Maybe you've got it on and it's turned down in the background. Thanks for not watching us, though. Thanks for listening to me when you could be watching the football. Football fever hasn't quite gripped Manchester anyway. I think I've seen about three cars today with the flags on the windscreens or on the windows. The side windows. The driver's side windows. Which is a nice thing. Although recently and in recent years, it has been discouraged amid claims it's not politically correct and it might be offensive if you run the St. George's Cross flag out your window or out the back of your car when England are playing. What? Poppycock! If you want to fly your flag, you go and fly your flag. To hell with this offensive nonsense. Taxi firms around the country, not all of them, have been recommended not to use the little flags that go on your side windows, lest they possibly offend passengers. I wish those taxi drivers would collectively tell their bosses to fuck off. Anyway, that really gets on my moobs, my big moobs. Were you drinking, Richie, were you, before you came on? No, sadly no. Never on the job, never on the job. Right, I'm going to kick off with two bits of what we call in the trade right of reply. Now, we have a forum on richieallen.co.uk, thanks to Hayden Hewitt. Good call by Hayden Hewitt, by the way. I didn't have much time for forums, not because I don't think people should be typing away, but I didn't want to be reading all the posts to add to the 1,500 other jobs that I have. But anyway, I do read some of the posts and I find them very interesting. And in fact, I've picked up a couple of good nuggets of information from the forum, richieallen.co.uk/forums. So SJP01 is a poster on the forum. And just a bit of right reply, I talked about going to the Billy Joel concert and I was scathing in my criticism of the security arrangements and the arrangements in general. Bit of right of reply coming up. SJP01 sent a message to the forum today. I, like Richie, attended the Billy Joel concert at Man United Stadium, Old Trafford. I, like Richie, thought it was a marvellous show. It was. Probably the best gig I have ever been to. I, on the other hand, found the security staff to be most pleasant and felt reassured that it was well policed. As for the fights that took place, that may have had more to do with the alcohol that was on sale inside the stadium. I had my say yesterday, so I won't follow up on that. That's right of reply there to SJP, who didn't have any issues with security at the show on Saturday night. Good stuff, mate. Thank you. And my friend Peter Kalchev, libertarian living in Australia, smart guy, sends me some very interesting stuff, very open-minded. And Peter has been listening to me, not recently, but in the recent past, talking about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. And I've been not so convinced about WikiLeaks' authenticity over the years. So Peter sent me this today, bit of right of reply, eh? Getting all politically correct in our own way. But Peter sent this, it is interesting. He said, Richie, I recall you saying in the past that you were somewhat wary of Julian Assange and WikiLeaks because they never broke a story that wasn't already out there, or words to that effect. I don't disagree with that, Richie, but I think you're missing the point. I heard Assange once say in an interview that in a world of endless fake news, WikiLeaks had never released a news item that was later disproven. Evidently, to ensure the integrity in the news releases they make, they check and recheck the veracity of all the information they get, and naturally that precludes the likelihood that they'll be first with the breaking news, as this vetting process may take weeks or months. More importantly, whilst the shows and websites like yours, Kevin Barrett's and Paul Craig Roberts, to name a few, have an international audience and an impressive listener base, especially in light of their limited chief cook and bottle washer resources, WikiLeaks, on the other hand, has, and Peter continues, rock star recognition throughout the world and a reader base that is dozens of orders of magnitude greater. Therefore, Richie, when WikiLeaks speaks, public opinion worldwide shifts en masse, and that's why Assange is being hunted down with the intention of extradition to the US and potential lifetime imprisonment. That's why, in my opinion, Assange and WikiLeaks are so important and must be protected. It's not so important that they be doing the actual investigative journalism themselves. They are important because they provide the platform that is trusted and reaches out to a critical mass of people. They almost single-handedly have the power, or so the elite fear, to bring down the criminal cabal that runs the world. Thank you, Peter Kalchev, for that bit of right of reply, that riposte to my contention that WikiLeaks is much ado about nothing. Thank you, Peter. Right, moving on. Spoke about this yesterday. Huge story, very important. The UK Prime Minister Theresa May said today the tax rises will indeed be needed to pay for the boost in NHS funding, which she announced over the weekend. May conceded that the public would pay more, but promised that this would be done in a fair and balanced way. When she said that, her nose poked the eye out of the person sitting directly opposite her in the front row. If you ever watched Bullseye, nose just absolutely destroyed the eyeball of the woman in the front row. Fair and balanced way. Sure it will, Theresa. The government also said that economic growth and a Brexit dividend will help cover the costs of the increased spending, which will see NHS England's budget increase by £20 billion. £20 billion by 2023. Remember we spoke about this yesterday on Sunday View? Here is the Prime Minister, Theresa May, very short and very, well, I won't say sweet.
Some of the extra funding I'm promising today will come from using the money we will no longer spend on our annual membership subscription to the European Union after we have left. But the commitment I'm making goes beyond that Brexit dividend, because the scale of our ambition for our NHS is greater still. So across the nation, taxpayers will have to contribute a bit more in a fair and balanced way to support the NHS we all use.
Fair and balanced, yeah. Of course it'll be fair and balanced. Now, you know I love Beth Rigby. Beth is very good. By the way, Theresa May later on today said the NHS should remain in public ownership forever. Another massive lie. Now, Sky correspondent Beth Rigby, like her a lot, very good, very good reporter. She's been following the ins and outs of this. And yet again today, Beth Rigby has claimed, like she did yesterday, that the Prime Minister, none other, Theresa May, is telling porcupines
Brexit might pay for it at some point in the future, but certainly in this particular spending settlement that the Prime Minister's announced today, it won't be a Brexit dividend that pays for it, not least because any Brexit dividends already earmarked for other things up until 2023, 2024, at the very earliest, things like paying the divorce bill from the EU, for example. So what she actually admitted today was that taxpayers would have to pay a little bit more to fund this big increase in NHS spending. But she also admitted that she hadn't yet done the sums, that she'd made the spending commitment, but she hadn't costed it. And that was going to be left to Philip Hammond, who's got his work cut out over the summer to work out how to pay for it. And he'll announce the details of that in the budget in the autumn. Quite unusual for the Conservatives not to cost spending commitments. That was something that George Osborne, you remember him, the former Chancellor, used to make a great deal over.
Yeah, she's got lies, more lies than damned lies. Theresa May is going to leave it up to Philip Hammond to sort out the finances. Philip Hammond only learned how to put his underpants on yesterday, yellow at the front and brown at the back. So I'm not holding out any hope that Philip Hammond is going to be able to do the thumbs. So what does the Labour Party say about all of this? Here's their shadow health secretary, a man called Jonathan Ashworth.
Our plans were fully costed. We don't actually know what the government's plans are. The Brexit dividend has unravelled. It's a Brexit deceit. We think what's going to happen is that borrowing is going to go up under a Tory government and tax is going to go up under a Tory government. And Tory MPs cannot expect us to wait till a budget in November to spell out what tax increases are coming.
Jonathan Ashworth. Well, Labour just wants to borrow billions from the Central Bank of England. And then, that's if they got in. And then when they get out again in 7, 8, 9, 10 years, well, the austerity will be so bad you'll just kill yourself. That's the way it is. Now, the effing, bastarding, blinking, mother effing House of Lords. The House of Lords, these are the farting, belching wasters that get £300 a day to sit in the upper chamber and fart and belch and scream and shout and subvert democracy. They're not elected, these people. Well, today, the Lords defeated the government's Brexit bill yet again. And MPs will have to vote again on how much of a say Parliament should have on Brexit. There was another defeat for the government by the unelected House of Lords. Peers, they're called peers, you see, peerages, decided that members of Parliament should have to approve whatever the government decided to do next if there was no final agreement with the European Union. 354 votes to 235. The issue will be sent back to the House of Commons for a debate this coming Wednesday. Don't you just love democracy? 16 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show for Monday, 18th of June, 2018. Harry Kane has put England into the lead against Tunisia, the mighty Tunisia. Most people's favourites for the World Cup. Not Harry Kane with an early goal. England lead 1-0. I'm going to do that for the rest of the World Cup. Just to wind up those non-football aficionados. Serious story covered this today on richieallen.co.uk. Cashless society. Unbelievable figures came out today from UK Finance, which is a banking trade body. 3.4 million people in this country hardly used cash at all in 2017. Imagine it. Hardly used cash at all. Debit card payments have now overtaken cash. That for the first time, that was in the year 2017. 13.2 billion debit card payments made in 2017, which was a huge rise on the previous year. In fact, it was a 14% rise on the previous year. The cashless society is here. It's unfolding in front of your eyes. And people are using this contactless thing all the time. You know, you go into a shop and you get a few things and they offer you the machine, you just tap the card against it, there's a beep, and you get a receipt, or you don't, and you walk away. Now, the frequency of contactless payments doubled in 1 year, from 2.8 billion to 5.6 billion in 2017. 2.8 billion 2016, 5.6 billion last year. And you probably would have guessed this without me telling you, but the majority of those aged between 25 and 34 never use cash at all and are less or least likely to have any cash on them at any time. Speaking to Sky News about this today was Mervyn Kohler. Mervyn is from Age UK, which is a charity which advocates for the rights of senior citizens. This is Mervyn Kohler.
Cash as a whole is getting more and more difficult to lay your hands on as bank branches close. And of course, some of the ATMs actually charge a fee per transaction. So the contactless technology is probably going to be a boon to quite a lot of older people. It means that you probably don't need to fiddle around looking for your spectacles to be able to enter your PIN. You won't even have to remember to memorise your PIN. But for all the older population that actually really adopt contactless cards, I think there are a large number living on pretty poor incomes who would be absolutely petrified with spending being able to happen around them without a proper record.
Yeah, he was on the right track to begin with, wasn't he? Because he basically laid out the benefits, which is how these things are sold. He said that those with mobility issues, you know, who might find it difficult, people with arthritis maybe, you know, arthritic hands. My hands are arthritic. I'm 43, but I do have arthritis in my hands and in one of my knees. Sometimes my hand seizes up, not often. So yeah, it's handier for senior citizens. Whip the card out, touch it to the device and move on. But then he correctly said that it'll worry old people who'll fear that they aren't in control as much as they are with cash when they know. See, senior people are very good at doing mental arithmetic, which the younger generations are not so good at because they don't have to, because their smartphone has a calculator on it. Honest to God, I read this. There's a huge problem with preteens and early teens doing basic arithmetic in their heads. You know, adding up 46 and 52 or 75 and 48 or whatever. They can't do it instantly. We can do it instantly. And senior folks are brilliant at doing it. They can't do it. So, of course, it's not going to benefit poor people. When cash is gone, I've said this today, and the only option is electronic payment, you will have the facility, you will have the possibility then for what we call economic censorship of people. Dissidents, for example. People who work hard to expose the system. Very easy to switch them off, you know. Just press a button, bang, they're gone. Can't travel, can't get on a train to go to a protest. Can't do anything. Can't pay for food, bang, you're gone. And I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that when cash disappears, so will opposition to this totalitarian system. It will disappear as well, inevitably. That's my opinion. Article today on richieallen.co.uk. 21 and a half minutes past the hour. Going to take a very quick break is what I'm going to do. When we come back, going to talk briefly about political correctness. There's a couple of stories in the papers today. The PC Twitter police went mad today for no good reason about a couple of things. We'll talk about that in a second. Before that, though, we'll take a break. Keep the tweets coming in. It is at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. It's Monday's Richie Allen Show.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
Richie Allen.
Welcome back to the Richie Allen Show. Lots to talk about, so we're going to move on very swiftly. Political correctness, the pillar of cultural Marxism, one of the pillars of cultural Marxism, wrote about this today on richieallen.co.uk. Check it out. There's been some very funny examples in the last few weeks. Shakespeare's Globe in London, which has a summer programme of plays by Shakespeare and other playwrights. They have a deaf girl acting as Celia. It is, I had to think about that there for a minute. Yes, it is Celia from As You Like It. This is not in any way to, you know, to put down or to insult or to in any way diminish people with disabilities, you know, deaf people. But there is a deaf girl signing as Celia. Did the great Bard write the character as deaf? I don't remember that. Studied English at third level. So why do it then? Why ask a deaf lady, however talented she might be as an actress, I'm sure she's brilliant, but why ask her to do it? Just to give a deaf actress a gig? Bit madness that, isn't it really? Just my opinion, I wouldn't like to go and see As You Like It with a deaf girl signing the lines, the dialogue, the words of Celia. Madness. Then we had the lifeboat lads last week, didn't we? Two experienced Whitby lifeboat volunteers, very good at their jobs apparently, saving lives on the sea. They were sacked and they lost an appeal later on because one of them gave another one a mug which featured a crewman's head superimposed onto a photo of a nude woman. So he gave his colleague a mug with a crewman's head superimposed on a graphic photo of a nude woman. Apparently this was a secret Santa present. The boss found out and fired them. It resulted in three of their colleagues resigning in support of them, meaning that for a time Whitby was five men down. Made the point today, don't go swimming there for a while, or don't go canoeing or boating there for a while, because you might be screwed if the weather changes or anything happens, you know. But as you're sinking to your watery grave, well, you might take comfort in the fact that those sexist bastards will never work again. That is just insane, that. It's insane. And there's a story today about the World Cup. I knew I'd work a story about the World Cup into the programme. You might have seen this today. Sainsbury's has been accused of sexism over its World Cup clothes range for kids, which features just one item for girls. So on its website, a mother discovered 21 tops for boys, including t-shirts and polo shirts, but just one option for girls, a t-shirt with the word love in sequins, in which the O is represented by a football. This was discovered by a parent called Sarah Paul Freeman, and she lost her shit and wrote on Twitter, "The difference between Sainsbury's girls' World Cup clothes versus boys is shocking. Young girls enjoy football too." Sainsbury's nipped it in the bud very quickly and said, "Well, actually, the range is unisex." They said, "Our World Cup clothing range is available to all children. We've corrected the error on our website. There shouldn't have been the little drop-down boxes with boys and girls because it's unisex. Sainsbury's hasn't labelled clothes as boys or girls for years." But it didn't matter. The Twitter storm took place. Massive offence. Because the PC police said Sainsbury's was stereotyping girls. The Sky News was on the case of this today with a debate on the Kay Burley Show, who initially heard from Naomi First. Naomi First is a journalist and she's not particularly impressed. Naomi's not particularly impressed by those who look for sexism everywhere.
A spokesperson from Sainsbury's has already said that they don't separate the labelling into boys and girls. And actually, I think on the website, it's just a kids' range and it comes down to a filter over boys or girls' clothes. So I think it really is pretty much a storm in a teacup. It seems to me like very much looking for a problem, and it's one of those situations where if you're determined to search for sexism everywhere, you know, you will eventually think that you found it. And I think that's really what's happening here. This isn't a case of Sainsbury's being sexist. It's just simply a case of how clothes are labelled on a website. And in any case, it won't, you know, a girl or a boy could buy those clothes, it won't make a difference. So in any case, I think even if it turned out Sainsbury's was selling more clothes, football clothes for boys and for girls, again, it wouldn't be a case of sexism. It would just be a case of a business decision about demand and what sells. And perhaps if it turned out that more boys or more parents are buying clothes, football clothes for boys, then it would make much more sense for Sainsbury's to sell more of that. But it doesn't even seem to be that that's the case anyway.
Well said, Naomi. Level-headed, common sense. Naomi first there. But Sam Smethers is the chief executive of the Fawcett Society, which campaigns for women's rights. And Sam Smethers doesn't agree. Here's Sam Smethers.
Well, it's good that they've come out and said that, but that isn't what the website was saying, which is why we commented in the way that we did. I think if you're searching and you put a key in saying for girls and then all you get is one item of clothing to choose from, that shows that they are marketing to girls and boys differently. And I think what we're trying to argue is that we need to open up choices for our children, not close them down. And far from this being a rare occurrence, actually, you've only got to walk into any toy shop or any clothing store in the high street today and you will see aisles labelled as for boys and for girls. You'll see a sea of pink in a toy shop and you'll see a sea of blue items in a toy shop for boys. So what we've really got to do is to stop retailers doing that and say, actually, let's open up choice. Let's not narrow things down. Stop labelling our children. Let them just be children and be free to choose what they want to choose.
What a load of bollocks. Maybe take some of your own advice, you daft mare. We have to stop shops, stop retailers dividing their toys in the aisles along male-female lines. Who the hell are these tyrants? You know, you must do as we say. Madness, this. Anyway, left back in by Kay Burley, the host, Naomi first eviscerates her argument. This is good stuff by journalist Naomi first.
Equally, you could walk into any sports shop in the country and see aisles full of football clothes for girls and aisles full of football clothes for boys. So I don't think I don't think it's true at all that there isn't, you know, there aren't choices for girls and that there aren't plenty of sports and football opportunities for young girls. In fact, I would say that the overwhelming marketing message that we receive is that girls can do anything. There's plenty of sports programs that are specifically aimed at girls. Women's football is getting far more coverage than it used to. The numbers of girls playing football, I think earlier this year there were figures of nearly 2 million girls and women in this country are playing football every month, and that's a rising figure. So I think the idea that something like a clothing selection at Sainsbury's is holding girls back or sending out a message it's a message that girls really don't care about, because it's not holding them back. And you know, girls that want to play football are playing football. Girls that want to be football fans are being football fans. And this is just, it's really taking things out of perspective. And as I said, it's looking for a problem where there isn't one.
And that's the key, you see, problems where there isn't one. These charities, these gender equality charities, there's no funding, there's no jobs unless you find sexism everywhere. And I'm not saying there isn't sexism, by the way. I know there is. I've encountered it. I saw it in radio when I was starting out in radio. I know sexism exists. Don't throw anything at me. But this sort of nonsense, well, it does nobody any good. And it certainly doesn't do the cause of those people who are genuinely experiencing sexism as a barrier to advancement with this sort of crap. Leave children alone, said Sam Smethers. Yeah, leave them alone. Let them do what they want to do, is the thing you need to do. Hey, this one won't go away. I'm going to finish with this one for the moment. I've lots to do, but I want to get my guest Shane Gibbs on and give him plenty of time. I'm going to finish with this one for the moment. You may have seen this last week that Netflix has introduced new anti-harassment training in the wake of the hashtag MeToo movement, right? And they've come up with a series of new rules for the set. So when television shows are in development, when they are being recorded, there are new rules, reportedly, including no looking at anyone for longer than 5 seconds, no lingering hugs, no flirting, and absolutely no asking for a colleague's phone number. Now, an on-set runner working on the next series of Black Mirror, thank God there's another series of Black Mirror, An on-set runner told The Sun newspaper that everybody was spoken to about Me Too, hashtag Me Too, and we were given these rules. RT's Anastasia Churkina has been having a little bit of fun with this most ridiculous of stories.
Netflix have reportedly introduced a policy advising their employees not to stare at each other for longer than 5 seconds. This has neither been confirmed nor denied by the company, but the general idea is allegedly inspired by the Me Too movement to avoid sexual harassment in the workplace. According to Netflix employees quoted by the press, this 5-second staring ban is part of a package of no lingering hugs, no asking for phone numbers, and no flirting.
We're proud of the anti-harassment training we offer to our productions. We want every Netflix production to be a safe and respectful working environment.
What do you think about when you think about the 5-second rule?
I have no idea what the 5-second rule
is. Well, if you were to take a guess, what do you think it would be about?
I can eat something after I after I drop it on the floor, but only before it lays there for 5 seconds.
We have the 3-second rule in Norway. So we you have to have 3 seconds between your car and the next car.
In time?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Guys, we're talking today to people about Netflix. You know Netflix?
Yes.
Okay. So they have reportedly introduced this new policy where they're asking people who work with them to not stare at each other for longer than 5 seconds to avoid sexual harassment.
Really?
Ridiculous. Can't be dealing with it. Nonsense. Yeah.
Yeah, nonsense, said that woman. It is nonsense. Don't stare at a colleague for any longer than 5 seconds. No lingering hugs, no flirting, no asking for a colleague's phone number. The world is mad. What are we? We're exactly 24 minutes, more or less 24 minutes to the top of the hour. It's time to get my only guest this evening on the programme. While we do that, it's time for a bit of music. Monday's programme. June the 18th, 2018, Tunisia have a penalty against England. So the BBC is telling me. Let you know if they score it. Back with Shane Gibbs in a minute. Do not miss this. Really interesting stuff on your Richie Allen Show.
Played guitar, jamming good with Webb and Gilly and the Spiders from Mars. We played it left hand, but made it too far. Became the special man, then we were Ziggy's band. Ziggy really sang, screwed up eyes and screwed down hairdo. Like some cat from Japan, he could lick him by smiling. He could leave him to hang. Became on so loaded, man. Well hung, snow white tan. So where were the spiders while the fly tried to break our bones? Just the
right, we'll move on swiftly then. Tunisia did score that penalty, so it's Tunisia 1, England 1 in Volgograd, I believe, is where the game is being played. Right, to vastly more important things than football. This is very important stuff. I've covered this subject before in different ways with different people, but I'm glad to be joined today by our guest who set up and founded TITV, which is Targeted Individual Television. And he set up that channel last year so that targeted individuals here in the UK could record their testimonies and their experiences of targeting. Because I said tens of thousands of people around the world at the top of the programme, but it might be more than that. It might be. I mean, we don't know how many people this have experienced this and haven't spoken about it. We're talking about people who are convinced that they are being targeted by agencies, maybe governments, maybe other agencies using implanted chips and sophisticated weaponry, but not always chips and not always weaponry. Doing nuisance things, mischievous things, scary things, following people, entering people's homes. That's all a part of it as well as the implantation and the sophisticated weaponry. Now, despite the massive numbers of people that are coming forward, and as I said, lots are, if you look for this online, you get a standard answer on the internet from psychiatrists, from psychologists who say that those who claim they are suffering from it are delusional and they are in the grip of some form of psychosis. Now, I laid my cards on the table before. I don't believe that satisfies my curiosity about this phenomenon at all. I don't buy that it's all delusional and psychosis. My guest who founded TITV has his own very, very interesting story to tell. Let's welcome to the programme Shane Gibbs. Shane, welcome. How are you?
Good evening, Richie. How you doing, my friend?
I'm very well. Thanks for coming on. And that's an important distinction to make. And it was actually you put that in my mind earlier today. It is your distinction, really. When we talk about this, it isn't always sophisticated weaponry and implants. There are many ways that agencies can target and harass and oppress people. It's fair to say that.
You're talking about a very, very minor part of the complete picture of the program, Richie. There's so much more that goes on. You know, of course, there's implantation, there's electronic harassment and microwave weaponry being used. That's pretty obvious. But it's a very, very minor part, as I'm hoping that your viewers will probably understand by the time we get to the end of this this interview.
Really good. Now, I asked you the other day, I knew there was no issues anyway, you're a gentleman. I said, look, you're going to talk about allegations. Now, I don't know you from Adam, Shane. I've spoken to you and I like you, and I've spoken to some people who know you, and I'm absolutely satisfied that what you're about to tell us, I'm satisfied that you believe that to be absolutely true, and I'm interested in hearing it. But I asked you not to mention individual names or even individual places, only because, even though I know that you've tried to bring certain people to justice for the things that you say have happened to you, that hasn't happened yet, and I wouldn't want to prejudice that by, you know, you naming people here on this programme. So we won't do that. The story is not going to lose any of its impact by not naming these people. Tell us, go right back to the beginning. How did this first impact you? When? Go right back. I believe it was something to do with you being out at a nightclub.
I was out celebrating with friends in a local nightclub in my hometown, and it was actually Boxing Day evening. All having a jolly old time, and there's a gentleman, shall we call him? Let's call him a gentleman. Let's be polite about the fella, who was notoriously known for being a bit of the town drunk type scenario, you know, always drunk up the town, etc., etc., etc. I actually knew him from a childhood. I started working on the markets when I was about 12, 13 year old, and his father used to own the largest fruit and veg stall in the marketplace in my hometown. So we knew of each other. And then there was an issue with a long-standing girlfriend of mine who he had always fancied, you know, typical girlfriend, boyfriend sort of stuff, jealousy and all that sort of thing. And he sort of took it on himself to try and attack me in the nightclub, probably sort of like 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. It was quite late. The evening was like near coming to an end. Luckily, I had my wits about me. I was actually driving, so I wasn't drinking. And I just, out of the corner of my eye, caught him coming towards the side of me, and it looked like he was going to hit me over the head with a bottle of beer or a bottle that he had in his hand. So I sort of like sidestepped. You know, I'm pretty savvy when it comes. I was born on a council estate. You know, you have to be streetwise. You know, you learn how to look after yourself, etc., etc. So I just sort of like stepped away out of the blow, if you like, and literally just punched the guy once, and that was it. Left the nightclub, and the following day, I was actually driving down to the gym, I think, to go and have a workout. And all of a sudden, I was swinged by, there was about four police cars, a dog van, well, God only knows how many police officers, who literally manhandled me and dragged me out of the car, handcuffed me, cautioned me, chucked me in a meat wagon, and run me down to the local Nick.
A very unusual response for something like this. I worked in nightclubs for years, not as a doorman, but as a DJ and as a barman. I could imagine if the other gentleman made a complaint, I could imagine a policeman knocking on your door of an afternoon or even after Christmas to say, Mr. Gibbs, there's been a complaint made against you, my friend. I need to take a statement from you. This indeed, is very indeed. Unusual. They caught you outside, into a van and off to the station.
Yeah, that's right. Straight away I was just literally bemused by the whole incident. Just before we go on, it actually turned out, as I found out later on, that the gentleman that attacked me was also the son of a master high-profile Freemason in my hometown.
Right, you were able to determine that as a fact, right? That he's...
After the fact, yeah. I actually spoke to Freemasons about this particular Freemason, and he's pretty well renowned for not allowing his family to be disrespected.
All right, okay. So that might explain then the initial heavy-handedness of the police if this Freemason guy made a complaint.
I think it's pretty...
I'm not justifying it now, but it might explain it. I mean, this is terrible. There's an altercation in a nightclub. Nobody was hurt. It happens all the time in nightclubs. If somebody makes a complaint, fair enough. You follow it up. Mr. Gibbs, what happened? Blah, blah, blah. But you're taken down to the station. What happened then?
Well, I was actually charged. I was charged with GBH and GBH with intent. And then I was bailed and released. I was then taken to trial at a Crown Court, a few towns outside of my hometown. The evidence that the club, luckily, the evidence that the club put out showed exactly what I said was
brilliant.
the truthful fact of what happened.
Brilliant.
The judge actually summed. I'll briefly go over it. The judge basically summed up the trial and said, "Well, I must warn this particular gentleman that not to use the judicial system in the UK for his own whatever retaliation, and best not to go around picking fights of people of my caliber, i.e. Mr. Gibbs's caliber." And then I was acquitted, a free man, and was released from all charges.
And I'd say you were relieved, because you never know when something like that happens. So thank God the nightclub had the CCTV footage, there are witnesses, no case to answer. Sorry about that, Mr. Gibbs. Off you go. Or well, so the, you thought.
Yeah, this is where the fun really began. So, yeah, I was obviously coming up to the trial, you know, knowing that all of this story had been fabricated and knowing that how almost the police, the local police, was working on behalf of this other gentleman, or his family, I should say. I was ready to go to prison. Then luckily the club sort of came out with this, because there was a couple of doormen that stood up in and was called to the case. And with the evidence from the CCTV and the comments from the doorman, it was just blatantly obvious that this guy had picked on somebody that was completely out of his league.
And you were entitled to defend yourself, hence throwing the punch as he came at you. Fair enough, happy day. So that should have been the end of it. You put it down to a bad experience and you say, well, so what? You know, the guy's an idiot. I won't bump into him again. I'll avoid him in the future. Take us on. What happened next?
Well, being so sort of like overwhelmed and actually quite surprised that I was actually a free man, I booked a week's holiday away with my cousin the following week. So I was away having a sort of like a just trying to get over all of the stress and the mental anguish, if you like.
Shane, it sounds like it really bothered you. I mean, I don't want to sound like a fool here now, but I've not had the experience. It sounds like it was really it shook you up going to court and having that experience.
I think the word that you need to use would be sort of like trauma basis, traumatized. I mean, it was an unreal situation. It was uncalled for, and it was completely and utterly wrong. And absolutely. I was just like, what the hell? Yeah, I mean, I had no idea. It was completely out of my hands. All I knew that I was facing a trial, a Crown Court, where I could possibly have gone away to prison for a long time. You know, the charge they put me on, I think at that time, it carried about a 15-year sentence.
He must have had an injury, did he? I mean, if he didn't, I mean, it doesn't matter anyway. You weren't guilty.
I chipped it, a couple of his teeth, and,
right, okay.
And he had some bruising and a cut lip. You know, simple, nothing major. Just, you know, I punched a fellow on the chin. I'm quite a stocky, muscly type fellow. Always have been. So,
if you go running at people in nightclubs trying to hit them, you know, you can't really go crying when they defend themselves. And right, so I just wanted to, you know, I don't want to in any way diminish that. It's just because I haven't had the experience of being dragged into a court facing prison time. So I understand, I absolutely get now why you chuck you up. So you went on holiday, happy days, couple of weeks in the sun, all is good, and you come back. What happened?
Came back in the early hours of a Saturday morning. Went up to my I owned a little flat at that time. It was actually the first property that I bought on the right through the right to buy scheme, so yeah, it's about the only thing I can thank Margaret Thatcher for. I tried to put my keys in the door, and the keys wouldn't fit in the door, and there was a piece of paper stuck on the door saying please contact your local police station. So then I've contacted my mum, because she was the one who had the keys and all that sort of stuff while I was away. And I said, Mum, what's going on? So I can't get in the flat, and there's a notice from the police here. And I'm just thinking, oh my God, what on earth have I come back into? Do you know what I mean? I've just got rid of the police and now I'm back in front of them again. Well, it turns out somebody had burgled my property while I was away on holiday. They had fitted new locks and failed to give the keys to my mother, even though she requested them, telling them that I was out of the country on holiday. So she told me this is like 4 o'clock in the morning. I just sort of like had a proper good holiday away with my cousin, you know, really, really feeling it, to be honest with you. 4 o'clock in the morning, I find myself going down to the local police station with the note saying, explaining the situation, to be told that the officer in charge of the case wouldn't actually be back in to on duty until 3 days later, till the Wednesday.
No way.
And I should come back up to the police station on the Wednesday to retrieve my new keys.
That's unbelievable. So obviously, like this is in the small hours of the morning. Did you remain calm?
Basically, my response to that was, well, please be made aware now that if somebody calls you from the property, from the block of flats, to the noise of somebody kicking,
you're going to break in. You're going to break in.
Don't worry about it, because it's me breaking into my own property, because you are not allowing me to take the keys to the property because it's been burgled.
What did he say?
He didn't say anything. Absolutely nothing. I mean, this is the craziest stuff about it. So I've gone back. I've kicked the door off, effectively that was the end of that scenario.
Shane? What was taken from the apartment?
Oh, it was ransacked, absolutely ransacked. You know, they took every piece of jewellery, they took paintings, they took small antiques. They literally emptied the place of anything of any sort of considerable value. Absolutely ransacked the place. The place was turned upside down when I got in there.
And at that time, did you assume that it was some scallywag who'd broken in when you were away?
I just thought it was bad luck. See, the thing is with this program, the thing is with this targeting, everything is tuned initially until you actually understand and realize what's going on. Everything is set up to look like you bad luck after negative coincidence and coincidence after coincidence and bad luck after bad. It's continual, and that's the way it's supposed to look. And I just thought, well, it's bad luck, you know, it's one of them things. I've been burgled, just a shame that I've had to get myself back involved with the police after I've just had what's gone on.
Right, can I ask you this then? Now we're about 7 minutes to the top of the hour. We can go to the end of the show, which is great. There are other aspects to this in terms of why they might do this to people, how they're doing it to people, and I want to get into those. So I don't want to rush you. It sounds like I'm saying, I know I'm going to rush you. I'm not going to do that either. But move it along and tell us how this escalated as far as you understand it, because I suppose right then you thought, bad luck, out of the country, jewellery robbed. But I suppose these days you don't believe that it was bad luck. that you were on holidays and somebody broke in, because there was an escalation in this, and I want you to take us through that escalation.
I'll give you a brief overview to run through to get to the right.
And I don't want to diminish it, Shane. I don't want to diminish it, because I've read it and you've taught me bits of it on the phone, and it's bloody serious. If you are right, that's if I don't know that you are. I know you believe you are, and I know there's. People have things to answer, right? So I know that much. But you know, this is serious, and I don't want to diminish that in any way by rushing you along. But go ahead, Shane.
Just quickly, what I will say is this document that I actually sent to you, and the document that I'm referring from here. I actually sent to Downing Street. I sent who then sent it. I actually got a response saying that they passed the case on to the Home Office. I then got a letter from the Home Office to tell me that they've then referred the case back to the Chief Constable of the police force involved in my victimisation. So it went full circle.
You've done it right all along. All along you followed the chain. You've done the right thing all along, which I was impressed with. It's one of the reasons I was happy to have you come on. So tell us how it escalated. You break back into your own place. You have to deal with that nonsense. You change the locks. Right, yeah. What happened then? Talk us through it.
The following week, I was awoken by one of the neighbours, and she said she's knocked on the door. She said, and she was quite concerned. She said, "Shane, I think there's something on your car." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" So I've gone down there. Someone had kindly put some kind of paint stripper, some kind of corrosive acid into like a squirty bottle, and had literally walked around the whole car, spraying pretty patterns with paint stripper all over the car.
What a pain in the arse that is.
That's same again. Disgusting. I mean, I just still didn't put two and two together. Move on to the next year. Various acts of vandalism to several cars, all reported to the police force concerned. 2000, expensive modified car stolen from a locked garage, also reported to the police force concerned. I purchased another car and started my own business in 2001. Moved to a new property, got married, got divorced, stayed in the property. She got paid off, etc., etc. As soon as I moved in, I was always having trouble with one of the neighbours, one in particular, not keeping his property, chucking rubbish over the fence, and all of his fences all messed up, guttering leaks, and so it was leaking down into my property on the front and rear gardens. And it was just constant, you know, and it was just so, and I just could never really understand what the problem was. But same again, you know, bad neighbour. I just put it down to, all right, well, it's just I'm unlucky. I've moved into next door to some dickhead, who just obviously doesn't give a hoot about his neighbours. And so yeah, that carried on from 2003, 2004. The problems with the neighbours carried on. 2006, I had my car stolen from Maidstone, very expensive Audi sports car stolen from Maidstone, again reported to the police. 2007, bought myself a dog, as you do, you know, got divorced, and I was thinking, you know what, I can't be doing with women anymore, so I'm going to get myself a dog, I'm going to get myself a puppy. Right. So I got myself a puppy, and then from 2007, there was no further interactions from myself with Kent Police, but there was still the odd, every now and then, you know, I'd go around the shop to buy a pint of milk, and then I'd come out, or someone would come in the shop saying, oh, somebody just rammed into a certain car in the car park, namely my car, and that happened sort of like four or five times in a matter of a couple of years, and it was like, geez, I am having some seriously bad luck here. You know, just but still, again, didn't really put it down to any. You know, I didn't class myself as a targeted person.
Even at that stage, let me jump in there because I've seen the timeline, and you say before 2007, before you moved next door to the nuisance neighbour, all of the things that happened to successive cars. That's a very obvious pattern there, and it would be obvious to any, you know, relatively experienced detective. That there's some very serious stalking. Maybe they wouldn't use words like that, but maybe they would use, like, somebody's got a very serious grudge against Shane Gibbs, because here is a pattern of very serious things that have happened to him. It's not one or two or three. It's over a dozen very serious incidents have happened to him.
I'll be brutally honest with you, Richie. I mean, it was so continual. It just became the norm. You know, I know that sounds really weird, but it was just like, oh, what again?
And what did they... Because you're obviously saying to the police at the time, whoever's heading up the case, whoever's responsible, you are obviously, as a bright man as you are, you're saying, well, lads, come on, look, obviously somebody has it in for me here. You know, I'm not coming down here crying every few weeks or every few months. You can see that something very serious is going on. Who has it in for me? That's a very serious crime, that. What would they say, what would they say to you?
Or nothing at all. It was from them, it was the minimalist type interaction on everything that I went up and reported. It was just, you know what I mean? It was just so blatantly, it was like, oh, what, are you again? Do you know what I mean? It was so, I mean, what'd you do? I mean, who are you supposed to call?
But cars being destroyed and, you know, vintage cars being taken from locked garages, cars being vandalised and banged into, and all of this, that's obviously somebody who, you know, on face value, if you're a policeman or a policewoman, you say, right, somebody is out to make this guy's life a misery and they're committing very serious crimes in order to imposition him. You know, that's like major detective stuff, that. We've got to find out who that is, who's doing this to him, but nothing. And then you mentioned then post 2007, you have a dog and it gets a bit ugly, doesn't it?
Well, it gets a little bit ugly from, something else that happened that was happening that I didn't put down to anything until now. Between 2007 2013, I built myself a very, very rewarding business. I'm a qualified chef, restaurant manager by trade. I came up with the idea to build a business around cost reduction within the hospitality industry, and I moved into account management. So I moved into the corporate world, if you like. And up from 2007 to probably about 2012, my income was up to sort of like £70,000-£80,000 a year. It was stupid.
You were doing really well.
Really, really well, you know. And I was planning on what the next sort of like host house and the next car to buy and all that. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, I started getting sort of like clients I'd had for years, just literally cancelling by email or a voicemail or a phone call for no apparent reason whatsoever.
Lots of clients now you're talking. Yeah, we're talking.
At one point, I think the maximum my client database consisted of just under 500 clients. And I work on, I was paid my income through residual income, which obviously means that I do one piece of work, I manage the account, and I carry on getting paid for it as long as the account's open and trading. So it was very, very, I was on cloud nine, to be honest with you, you know, which made all this other, you know, the trouble with the cars and all that sort of stuff. It was like, yeah, whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's just, I'll go and buy myself a new one. Until then, all of the clients started cancelling, and it was just like, what on earth's going on? Do you know what I mean? It's taken me years to build this up, and it's literally falling apart.
And it wasn't business-related, Shane, because everything was hunky-dory, your service was good. It wasn't business-related. What sort of... When they were emailing you, what were they saying? Were they saying, we're going somewhere else, Shane, or...
Saying they're going to carry it, they're going to stop. Because basically what I did, I was their sort of broker for all of their product suppliers, service providers. You know, I was the negotiation man. I would negotiate special rates because I'd go to a supplier and say, look, I've got 400... restaurants and hotels, and this is just a hypothetical thing I'm going to tell you, and I've got 400 clients and they all want to buy their chips and beans from you, and I don't want to pay that price. It's got to be a cheaper price, and you've also got to pay me an income out of everything that goes through your accounts. So that is the basic form of the business that I run, and that was with service providers for absolutely anything and everything: waste disposal, food suppliers, alcohol, people who emptied the bins, fire extinguisher contracts, sanitary bins in the female toilets, you name it, because I built it as if I was the owner, you know.
So right, yeah.
So that makes sense. And it was a free service. There was no cost for the service. So it was a free service, and the client saved between, I don't know, 15 or 20% on their costs prior to me turning up and putting them onto my pricing structures. So it was a numbers game.
And out of the blue, they all start, well, not all of them, but lots of them at the same time get in touch to say, even though this is a gift from God to them, this service, and it's beyond cost effective because it isn't costing them, they start getting in touch with you to say, thanks very much, Shane, but we're not going to do business with you anymore.
that's it. Yeah, we're selling the business, or we're moving to another supplier that you haven't got on your list, or, you know, it's just silly little excuses that just sort of, and again, I still didn't put it all together. But once we get to the end of this interview, hopefully all of this will make sense to everybody that's listening.
Let me do a quick recap, right? Because people are joining the show all the time. Shane Gibbs is on the line. Shane founded TITV, Targeted Individual Television, last year, set up to give targeted individuals in the UK access to a channel where they could put their testimonies on the record and their experiences. And he's been telling us about his own very unusual story, which goes way back to 2000, Shane, doesn't it? It goes back to 2000, 2001. 1995, when an innocuous incident in a nightclub where somebody attacked Shane and Shane fended him off with a punch, went to court. He was charged with grievous bodily harm. It could have resulted in a long prison sentence, but the charges were pretty much thrown out because the nightclub came forward with evidence to prove that Shane was telling the truth. But the man whom attempted to attack him and whom was repelled by Shane, his father, Shane told us, was a very high-ranking Freemason in the area. And after that, things began to happen to Shane that go beyond coincidence. He talked about going away on holiday after he bought his apartment, his flat, came back. It had been ransacked, but the locks had been changed on his doors. The police hadn't given the keys to his mother. They didn't want to give him the keys for several days. He had to break into it. And after that, a series of things began happening. Stuff belonged to him being vandalised, cars being stolen. It's been on for a number of years. Very sinister stuff. Non-coincidental stuff. There's definitely a pattern here. We moved up to 2007, where things began to get very good for Shane in terms of his business. He opened and formed a brand new business in the hospitality industry, providing services for companies, and began to make a considerable amount of money and do really well for himself. Things seemed to be on the up and up. But in 2013, Shane was telling us, strange things started to happen again with respect to multiple clients at the same time deciding to email him or contact him to tell him, look, we don't want to do business with you anymore. And you said that even then, you still weren't thinking that this, you know, was related to the stuff that went on in the 90s and in the early to mid 2000s. You just thought, shit, it's just unlucky. That's what you thought.
That's basically what I put it down to. You know, I didn't identify the pattern. But I was just literally, I'm not the sort of person to let things get me down. So I just, every time I get knocked down, I dust myself off and I stand myself up and I carry on moving forward. You know, that's the type of person that I've always been.
So what changed, Shane? What changed? What happened then that made you think, well, look, there's something very sinister happening here? Because that can't be easy to come to that conclusion. So take us on from what happened with
jump to 2013 now, and this is where it really, really starts getting really wacky and crazy, and some crazy stuff started happening. The business was failing, the income had gone down, so I decided to take in a lodger. I took in a lodger. I'll just briefly go over this. I won't go into too much detail. He didn't have a car, so I had a couple of cars around me at that time, so I agreed to sell him a car, and he was going to pay for it on instalments. He ended up doing a runner, owing 3 months' rent, and taking the car without paying a penny.
Jesus.
Right, so and part of the agreement, the written agreement, was that I will keep the logbook, and I will keep a set of the keys, and keep the car in my name until you finish paying for it, luckily. And then he went off and run off owing all the rent and taking the vehicle with him at the same time.
He stole the car.
It was my car. He hadn't been paid for.
So luckily he
had mentioned where some family of his were living in. It was a small village just outside of my hometown. So I decided to go and do a bit of a recce one evening. And luckily for me, I found my shiny new car, all nice and clean and polished and stuff, sitting on this driveway. And I thought, So I sent him another text. Tried to contact him. It was completely blanking me. So I sent him a text saying, like, if you don't contact me today, then I'm literally going to take the car back. And then he did reply saying, no, you don't know where I live, blah, 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 blah. So I went and somebody gave me a lift out to this little village. I walked into the went out to the car. It's my vehicle with the keys. Opened the car. Drove the car back home. Following morning, I had 8 to 10 officers, police officers, banging on my door.
Eight to ten, as many as that.
Yeah,
as many as that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, there was hordes of them. There was that many. My front pathway was quite. It was probably about 10 or 12 feet. There was that many of them. There was queuing outside the front of the outside of the front gate.
To arrest you. Presumably over the car.
To arrest me for theft of a motor vehicle.
So you would have said, well, lads, look, it's actually my vehicle. I had an arrangement with the guy. He didn't honour it. Look, I've still got the logbook. The ownership hasn't been changed to his name. It's my car.
Yeah.
So they said what?
So they arrested me, took me down to a police station that was sort of like 30 miles outside of my hometown, charged me with theft and bailed me. My solicitor got involved, and literally they within a week I had a letter saying that all charges have been dropped and blah 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 blah, but your car has been impounded, and they kept the car. They would not allow me to take the car back for just under a year.
What?
On
what basis, if the charges were dropped and obviously ownership of the car had been proven, how could they keep it?
This is the thing. The new girlfriend of my lodger had applied to DVLA to get the logbook put into her name.
Right.
So they said that there was no charges and they was keeping the car until they can work out who was the legal owner. And
but that was obviously part of the fraud. You didn't have to be the smartest detective in the world to know that the guy, the ex-lodger, would pull a stunt like that in order to, you know, protect himself. Against you taking the car back. You know, it's very straightforward. And Jesus, and for a year.
When they'd actually released the vehicle back to me, two of the back windows were open. So the car had actually filled up, the footwells were full of water and it was mouldy and it wouldn't start. And it was virtually worthless. You know, I ended up chucking it down the auction.
Well, hang on a second now. Who has liability for the condition of a car? If they took the car into their possession and it was, you know, whatever about this idiot lodger guy, at least he looked after the car, so when they took it was in good condition. Surely they've got some sort of liability for the condition of it, in terms of it, if they leave windows open, you know, well they've got to account for that, surely. Or I'm obviously wrong.
They even took the paperwork and the spare set of keys from me when they came round, because obviously, I mean, the guy still had the other set of keys. So this is another little sticky one. So I had the spare keys, spare set of keys, and all the paperwork. When they arrested me and took me from my home, they took the keys because they needed the keys to drive the vehicle, right?
Yeah. So they're in possession of the car. They're responsible for the condition of the car.
Well, they denied taking the keys and denied taking the paperwork.
So they lied about taking the keys and the paperwork.
Well, if they didn't take the keys, how could they drive it? They didn't take the keys.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just and
you had to scrap the car. It was in such bad condition.
Yeah, I mean, I ended up. He was supposed to pay just over £2,000 for it. And he didn't pay a penny. I ended up. I think I got about £600 at the auction for it.
Christ.
So yeah, quite a hit on that one, mate. Quite a hit on that one.
No, I'm listening. So things began to accelerate then. I know this. I've seen the timeline.
After that shenanigans, this is where it really, really starts getting funny and really, really weird. And see, the thing is with this targeting program, it's the same structure wherever, whatever part of the world you may be in, whether you're in America, whether you're in Australia, whether you're in the UK, Canada, New Zealand, choose one. It is exactly the same process. It's a very, very structured and very, very step-by-step program. Does that make sense?
It does.
Right. Everything I've told you up to now, I'm still not even looking at myself as being a targeted person. Or I just knew that there was some kind of darkness, if you like, that just seemed to be. And the only thing I could put it down to was the court case, because that's the only nefarious thing that could possibly be the reasoning behind all of this crazy stuff that was going on.
Right, 13 minutes past here. I want to take a break. It's going to be 90 seconds long. When we come back, you're going to talk about what's happened in the last few years. Because it gets
this is the real scary, disgusting, foul stuff that these people do.
It gets very sinister. Shane, thanks for staying with us. Stay with us. We'll be back in 90 seconds. Shane Gibbs is our guest. I've retweeted a link to TI Television, Targeted Individual Television, on YouTube. I've put a link out there. I will put another one out before the end of the programme. This is Monday's Richie Allen Show, Fab Radio 2, here in Manchester. Tune in radio as well, of course, richieallen.co.uk, triggerwarning.tv. Lots of places to hear the programme. More from Shane Gibbs in just a wee while.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Shane Gibbs is our guest. He founded TI Television, which is on YouTube, Targeted Individual Television. He's been telling us his pretty extraordinary, remarkable story of events that took place after 1995, when he was at a nightclub and he was assaulted. He was attacked by a man. He defended himself, punching the man once. Put on trial for grievous bodily harm, faced jail time. Luckily enough, the truth came out very quickly. The nightclub staff were able to prove Shane's version of events. The judge moved very quickly to dismiss the case. But the man who took the case against Shane, the guy who attempted to assault him, Shane reckons it's not unconnected that his father was or is a very high-ranking member of the Freemasons. Now, a number of very unsettling things happened for many years after that. Burglaries, vandalism to cars being stolen, much more besides. We moved up to 2013 when a car that Shane had given, had sold, but had given to the man while a former lodger, while a series of installments were being paid, and he withheld the car's ownership details and logbook until the man paid for the car. But the man made off with the car, stole the car. Shane tracked him down, took repossession of the car. The police got involved. He was arrested for stealing a car. They kept this car for nearly a year, handed it back to him in a deplorable condition. Wasn't worth much, so he got a few hundred quid for it at auction. And up to this point, despite these bizarre coincidences over the period of those years, Shane was happy to think that he was maybe born, you know, under a cloud or had walked on a crack or whatever. But then things begin to take a very, very sinister turn indeed. Shane, move it along. 17 and a half minutes past the hour. Get serious now. What happened then? You've moved past the car stuff. You've moved on. You've dealt with that. I'm sure you were still a bit pissed off, understandably. Yeah. But what happened next?
Well, that's when everything really took a really, really nefarious turn, Richie. And basically, it all started with some, you know, I lived in the street I lived in. It was mainly elderly people. You know, I used to fix their garage roofs for them. I used to do their gardening for them. I used to carry stuff and fetch stuff and clean stuff and, you know, unblock their gutters. And so I was very, very well liked throughout the whole neighborhood.
A good neighbor.
And yeah, good neighbour. You know, they was elderly. I was a young, fit man. And if they needed something doing and I had the time, then yeah, I went and done it. And then almost overnight, it was really, really bizarre. Everybody that I would sort of like meet on a daily basis literally started shunning me and trying not to interact with me. And it was really, really weird. And I'm just like, I mean, it's like, what's going on? You know, something really, really strange is going on. It was also about that time that some strange events started going on in the house. And somebody was going in my house when I wasn't there. And people, while I was out working, I used to come home and discover belongings and expensive stuff that I owned, destroyed, laptops taken apart, stereo systems all unscrewed with the speaker cones hanging out of the boxes.
In a locked house, Shane?
In a locked house. In a locked house with my dog in it.
Right. Park that just for 1 second. Go back to people shunning you.
Yeah.
Now, listening to you and speaking to you on the phone, you sound very level-headed. How do you notice... How do you begin to notice that your immediate neighbours and the people that you're very familiar with are kind of sending you to Coventry? How do you notice that? How does that manifest?
I'm a salesman, Richie.
Yeah. You know,
my business is a salesman. My business is reading people. Reading body language. You know, I've done it for a living. You know, so you know when there's something wrong. Well, for me, I knew that there was something wrong. I knew that something that was being said to them that they weren't talking about, or I don't know what it was. There was obviously some kind of slander campaign that had been put around the local community.
Right.
It was just so obvious.
And so somebody or some bodies had put stuff out there about you that led people to start to give you a wide berth. Did you try to ascertain? Because I can only imagine how you felt. It must have been terrible. I'd have been trying to find out. Listen. What's going on? Did somebody say something about me? At least tell me I can deal with it. Did you say that to people?
Well, I tried to carry on interacting with them, you know, but I'm not the sort of person to force myself on somebody if they don't want to talk to me. So I just thought it was very, very bizarre and just thought, you know, well, maybe my time living up in this area is coming to an end and maybe I should think about selling up and moving to another area. You know, that was basically what I put it down to. Then like the real strange stuff started going on in the house. You know, like I said, you know, I'd go out to work, I'd come back. There would be no sign of forced entry on the property whatsoever.
No sign of forced entry in a locked house.
No sign of forced entry. Absolutely none. And the door to start with used to be locked. So I just unlocked it, you know, as anyone would when they come home from work. The dog started acting really bizarre and being very, very clingy when I got home. You know, I should have realised something was going on when he started doing that. I started coming home and finding my belongings destroyed, smashed, taken apart, just literally, you know, speaker cones taken out of speaker boxes and laptops literally taken apart with the screws and everything left there for me to see when I got in.
Sinister stuff. And I know you have witnesses. I know you've had people look at this. Sinister stuff. So you go back to
I've still got all the pictorial evidence.
You've got all the pictures, yeah. So you go back to the police. I mean, Christ, this is dreadful stuff. Guys, there's obviously guys and girls. Let's not be sexist, Richie. You go down, you say, Mr. and Mrs. Policeman and Policewoman, there are people coming into my house. Indeed, what the hell is going on? What did they say?
Well, they actually ridiculed and laughed at me, mate. Literally laughed me out of the police station. When I was calling them to come round, they would come round and say, oh, there's nothing going on here. And it was just the smirk on their face. You know, they had the sort of smirk that you just, it just that slimy thing. And a lot of TIs can relate to this.
This is Hammer House of Horror stuff, this, and I'm not trying to make a joke out of this at all. This is Hammer House of Horror stuff. You get back to a house, no forced entry. You have to unlock the place to let yourself back in. And the place is trashed. And you call the police out and they tell you basically to go and take a run and jump. And they kind of smirk at you and say, well, what can we do?
Yeah.
Wow. Indeed.
Well, it continued, you know, and I continued reporting it. They then suggested that I get CCTV. I got several very expensive sets of CCTV, internal, external. I covered the whole bloody place, you know. I had lights and cameras everywhere. The day after I had it all installed, went out to work, come home, and every one of the cameras had been smashed to pieces.
No way.
Inside and outside. So I then called the police again.
And were they working? I mean, how could somebody do that without being detected?
Well, how could they do that in the daytime in a neighborhood where people are walking about and it was a semi-detached house?
You took the words out of my mouth, Shane, because the next question obviously is, surely to Jesus, neighbors must have seen something.
Well, you tell me.
So you go knocking on doors. Hey, Michael. Hey, Jim. Hey, Sarah. What's going on? Have you seen anything? What? Nobody talks to you?
Absolutely nothing. Nothing at all. Literally no interaction from them whatsoever. They would see me. They would put their head down, turn tail and go back into the house.
How did you cope with that, Shane? That had driven me mad.
It was tough. It was just like when it started, all this stuff started happening, you know, the destruction of all the property and the way that the police were behaving or misbehaving, as I should say, when I was reporting all of this stuff. Yeah, I mean, it was just, they was making a mockery out of me. They was running amok with me.
So did you try and go above their heads? Because there are procedures with respect to reporting misconduct by police officers. Did you go down that road? Because that's the first thing I would have done. I would have said to these people, right, I want your badge number. I'm going after you.
Yeah, well, later on, let me just get through this little bit here, and then we'll go on to the next bit.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I carried on the harassment and all of the home invasions and, you know, wheel tires being slashed on cars, wheel nuts being unloosened. So I'd go to drive down the road and I think all of a sudden it felt like something was going to fall off the car, but there'd be like three wheel nuts missing out of the front wheel or the rear wheel. It was just endless, absolutely endless. I also at that stage, everywhere I went, there was bad service. I'd go to the garage and I'd always have to go back a dozen times to go and get something rectified. I got to start getting bad treatment. I mean, the private dentist, a private dentist, I spent thousands, and all they've done is just literally caused me problem after problem after problem. I used to go back with one tooth. I remember one tooth, I spent about £800 on a crown. I had to go back and have that looked at probably about 15 or 20 times.
Now, you know full well, because you're a smart man, you know that some of our listeners will think, yeah, I can see how, because of what happened years ago, maybe they saw an opportunity to use him as one of these, to make him a targeted individual for experimentation or whatever. I can possibly see that. But some listeners will say, I have no doubt, they will say, but Shane, how could they be so all kind of invasive, I can't even find the words to describe this, that they could enlist the help of car mechanics and dentists? I mean, why wouldn't they tell these people?
I'm telling you the way it happened,
mate. I'm not disputing you, I'm just saying, you know, that people will hear this and go, but if I'm a dentist and some guy comes in, and it could happen, and says we want you to do this to Shane Gibbs or whatever, I'm going to tell him to fuck off, Shane, excuse my language.
Most decent people would. So what on earth are these people, what are they being told? And it's a big question that you will get from all TIs.
Yeah.
Every one of us, this is what I said earlier on in the interview, it's the program is structured exactly the same, whether it's in this country or in another country or in another part of the world, it's exactly the same. The slander camp, the bad
that
luck.
That is true. That is true.
Coincidence after coincidence, interactions with negative interactions with police forces, home invasions. My dog was beaten. For Christ's sake, Richie. Then I came home one day, my dog's face had been smashed with something that left one of his eyeballs nearly hanging out of his head.
Yeah, I saw the picture, yeah.
It's disgusting, you know what I mean? And it's like a sick, it's like these people enjoy it. I mean, it's like a sick, twisted game that my life and my dog's life was on the line. I mean, they was looking, the ultimate goal of this program, the targeted individual program, is basically there's very, very few options. They will either try and get you to turn you insane, they will either try and push you to suicide, or they will get you to act out in public, cause yourself some long big problems, and you'll end up in prison for a long time.
Why do they, this is the $64 million question, why do they want to do that to people? If there is a they that is doing it, and I told you today, I'm sympathetic to you and to the other people I've met, Catherine Horton PhD and others, I have a lot of sympathy with what has happened to you. I certainly don't think you're mad. I certainly don't think, you're in the grip of some psychosis. I'm not qualified to say that, but I don't believe that you are. So why would they do that to people? What's the end game, Shane?
The question is, Richie, why would they want us to do it to potentially hundreds of thousands of people around the world? That's the ultimate question. Why?
Before we talk more about why, if I'm to think right now that everything you've said is true, like I said, I don't disbelieve you at all, but if I'm taking it absolutely, Shane is right, there is a sinister force behind this, I'd have to imagine that you winning that court case at that time, back in 95, somebody said, let's use this guy. I mean, is that how you think it happened? Somebody went, all right, we don't like this guy. Let's use this guy. Let's put this guy in the program.
I think they call it, over in America, they call it, they think there's some kind of like terrorist watch list or hit list or something like that. So there's obviously some kind, you know, because, I mean, since all of this stuff that I'm talking about now, you know, I mean, is all in the past, you know, and that's hence the reason now why, I mean, I get left alone. I don't get no bother. I haven't had no bother from the police since I've been here for nearly 3 years.
So it stopped.
It's actually stopped dead.
But at its worst, God love the pooch, God love him, he was beaten, the house was destroyed, turned inside out, people took wheel bolts. I mean, Jesus Christ, that's attempted murder, that.
Well, you're also talking about, you know, there was a couple of really, really bizarre instances where I was rushed to hospital after consuming food out of my property from some, and they just said that maybe I'd had a reaction to it. Well, I mean, I was taken by ambulance on two occasions. One occasion, I mean, like, they kept me in there, hooked up to all sorts of monitors. They didn't. My whole body was convulsing, and I was vomiting blood. They kicked me out of the fucking hospital. Wow. I couldn't even.
It must be said, by the way, I saw Shane on a film made by Vice, and I was interested. I was very interested to see Shane's mum. Is your mum's your mum's a young woman? So presumably she's still around, Shane.
She's 70, mate.
Yeah, she's a young woman, yeah. Well, thank God she is. Yeah, I know that film was made over a year or so. I only saw a little bit of it, and...
That was the whole reasoning why Kieran and myself actually formed TI Television, was to rectify the absolutely disastrous and disgusting portrayal of us in that documentary.
You're not going to like this now, but this is because I have one foot still in commercial and mainstream media. I can understand why you're pissed off with it. But what I saw of it, and even the bits where they interviewed the psychotherapist, I thought they did as best as they could to be objective, I thought. That's what I thought. I didn't think it was, you know, an overt hatchet job. Now, in your situation, right?
All the information I've talked about in this interview, they was given all of this information.
And they left it out. Fair enough. Okay.
They was given the video of the patrol car running into the trying to run me into the central reservation of
because we didn't talk about that, but you have footage of a UK police patrol car.
Well, that all stemmed from when all of the stalking and harassment out in the street. You know, I was to get I'd go to the bank, and all of a sudden I'd put my cash card in, and then there'd be like 15 people literally hanging over my shoulder who could have pulled the money out for me. It was crazy, really, really rude people everywhere you went. Staring at you. Some people used to walk past and spit in front of you down, you know, and it's just like, what on earth is going on here? Because I'm so thick-skinned, because I'm, you know, in my younger days I've done a bit of door work and all that sort of stuff, so I'm very, very hard to get it to intimidate, you know. It's just an emotion. Intimidation doesn't even come into the equation.
Well, I mean, it's wonderful that you've been able to hold yourself together and not allow yourself to be intimidated like that. The reason I brought your mother up is because she came across well in the bits that I saw of her, and she seems like, you know, a typical mum, you know, hardy and smart, and you wouldn't pull the wool over her eyes, you know. It looks to me like she's absolutely certain that this has been happening to you and that you've not...
As are all of my close friends and the rest of my family.
Yeah.
You know, because they have seen this all pan out over years and years. See, what I basically did is I started utilising Facebook as my bulletin board, and every incident that happened, it was like post it, videos of patrol cars, post it. When I put the video of the patrol car up onto my Facebook, within an hour, I had the chief inspector phone me on my mobile phone apologising on behalf of his officers.
Oh, it's a shame you didn't... well, of course, you wouldn't be able to. Why would you be able to? It's a shame you didn't record that. But you did put the videos up of the police behaving badly. I mean, that's just definitive proof. Where can people see those videos today, by the way? Are they on the TI channel?
They're on TI TV, yeah. I think the video was in the programme about one. But I've also got, we've got the TI television, we've got a website, we've got www.ti-television.com, all lowercase. There's forums on there, there's testimonies on there. It's quite young, we're still quite a young venture. We only started sort of like last August, September. We've got a helpline where TIs can phone a certain time.
Shane, just while you're thinking of the number, write it down, because I'm going to actually do me a favour, type it to me there, will you? While you're typing it to me, I just want to do a quick recap, point out a couple of things. Shane Gibbs is on the line at the moment. Shane set up TITV, as he's been talking about there, after his own experiences over 20, well over 20 years, dating back to 1995. Horrific stuff that he's described. To be fair to Shane, what's very interesting about Shane is that he has put forward and put out there on his channel a lot of very, very interesting and corroborating evidence that this stuff was happening to him for years. It got really, really, really scary and sinister in and around the year 2013 for a few years. And then it stopped. And you think, Shane, it stopped because you stood up to it and you started to use social media to basically, you know, throw it back to these guys and put this information out there. Is that why it stopped?
To publicize? Well, no, it didn't. It didn't actually stop. While when, you know, that gate continued, it literally seriously continued. But I was basically, I mean, I was lost. What, you mean, what, who'd you go to? I mean, you've got, and it seems like you've got a whole police force that have got no interest in looking in, and if anything, no interest. But I mean, it's actually the police that I used to be following around by, like I've said about the video being run off the motorway, etc., etc., etc. I mean, who are you supposed to call? Who are you supposed to call? The Ghostbusters, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody says about TIs having mental problems, and I mean, the only problem that me personally and a lot of TIs have got is a governmental problem. It's not a mental problem. We're getting let down by our own governments, Richie. It's disgusting.
Well, it's amazing that this guy, chief superintendent or whomever, phones you up to say, listen, I'm very sorry about all of that. And presumably, and I know you did say it to him, well, these guys have to be disciplined. There has to be a disciplinary process. They must be suspended pending an investigation into harassment and torture. It's mental torture of a UK citizen, somebody they're supposed to be protecting. And presumably his response was, well, we'll look into it. Leave it with me. I suppose. I mean, I'm putting the phone number out there now. You know, so when he says to you, I'm sorry on behalf of my officers, you know, the yeah. next step should be suspension, investigation, yeah. and then
disciplinary. Sacked. Disciplinary. Yeah. And these guys are supposed to be highly trained. They do specialist driving courses to actually be able and qualified to actually drive these vehicles. Now, so why did he, I think he actually put it down to an error of judgment.
Oh, that's madness, isn't it? An error of judgment.
That word, error of judgment.
And after that, then, it stopped.
Well, no, not quite. It was at that point, I mean, I started getting a little bit more, right, okay, I need to catch these people that are coming in my house. So I then started buying all of these little spy recorders and audio recorders and little mini cameras and all that sort of stuff. And one night I set them up and they was running digital recorders. So they was just continually record. One night I set them up. There was actually one just outside the bedroom that I slept in. I played it back the following morning and, I was horrified to actually, I've actually got the recording. I've had it put through a special sound engineer who's done a full report, a full cleanup on the audio recording. I actually captured people creeping around my house while I was asleep in bed, opening drawers, going through paperwork, just literally rummaging through. I mean, you can hear these people walking around me while I'm sort of like snorting and snoring in bed.
And you find out the following morning, huh?
And I absolutely shit myself. I won't lie to you.
Well, who wouldn't?
Well, at that point, it was just like, you know what? This is getting too real. So I had to be around other people. I mean, it was pretty obvious that what they was trying to do. I mean, they would have not batted an eyelid if my life had been taken. It seemed like they was looking to push me to either poison me or drive me insane so I go and do myself in, or which is one of the main options that they look for from any targeted individual.
Or are they trying to push people sometimes into doing something? You know, rather than push somebody to kill themselves
or act out,
but maybe yeah. to do something, maybe big, maybe to murder somebody or.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? It happens. Richie, I've got probably 15, maybe 20 people on my friends list on Facebook that have all suicided.
You knew that, 15 that people that took their own lives
through their targeting.
And I just want to point out, and I'm not doing this to impugn Shane, I'm doing it for two reasons. One, in the interest of balance, and two, because, you know, it might disgust people to hear this. But despite the fact that there are tens, possibly hundreds of thousands of people around the world experiencing this, and by the way, this predates the internet, because some psychologists will have you believe that people like Shane and others, that because they speak to each other so much, they start taking on each other's symptoms, for want of a better word. But that's not true, because this predates Facebook and Twitter, when people in the furthest flung corners of the earth were writing about this and saying, as Shane pointed out, saying the exact same things. So, you know, the psychiatrists want you to believe that this is corroboration through kind of subconscious, because you're all in the one place on Facebook and Twitter. But don't believe that. Don't believe it so easily. It isn't. You know, I'm going to be fair here. It doesn't work as simply as that. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, they're very dismissive of it. If you put it into Wikipedia, for example, or Google, you'll get a very standard explanation. This is psychosis, and it's paranoia on a huge scale, and that's what they say. Shane, to your knowledge,
yeah,
is there any, let's call them system doctors, not, you know, independent people, because I know a lot of independent people have been very good in supporting targeted individuals, but are there any system people who are actually starting to say, well, hang on a second now here, you know, there's something more to this than just, oh, they've all got some sort of shared psychosis? Is there any breakthroughs?
Not here in the UK.
Not in the UK, no.
Not in the UK. There's nothing at all. And just before I move on, when you mentioned the psychiatry, you know, do you actually understand that how psychiatry is actually a weaponized form of attack?
Well, I'm not thrilled with psychiatry as a science. You know, I had my own difficulties when I was a boy. And I went to a psychiatrist, and luckily for me, I was old enough in my mid-teens to tear up the prescription for the antipsychotic medication that they wanted to give me, because I had a bad experience being physically abused. I knew I didn't need to take antipsychotic medication, needed to do was come to terms with the abuse and get over it and say, well, look, to hell with it, it didn't kill me. Move on. Either I killed the guy who did it, which you can't do because you go to jail. That's the catharsis, by the way. Or you just move on. So I didn't need antipsychotic medication. So I don't like psychiatrists. I'm sure there are nice psychiatrists. I don't like the science. I'm sure there are nice psychiatrists, well-meaning people. But the science I don't like. But you don't like it at all.
There's a certain element. See, what you've got to understand is, and this is where the link to Freemason comes in. I mean, you've got the police. There's a huge percentage of the police that are Freemasons. There's a huge percentage. I mean, who are Freemasons? You know, business owners, psychiatrists, doctors, accountants, etc., etc., etc. Dentists, garage owners. You know, can you see the little links that I'm trying to put together here?
Yeah, I can.
So, I mean, that's what, and you'll probably get it from 80 or 90% of any TIs that you do speak to. They're gonna mention Freemasonry along the line somewhere.
So when you're saying that when people around the world, when they take this problem to psychiatrists, they're basically walking into a spider's web.
Because the program is so crazy, you know, can you imagine going to a doctor and telling them that you've been poisoned, your dog's been beaten, people are going in your house, and et cetera, et cetera. You're getting followed by police cars, and you're getting people spitting at your feet when you walk past them, all your neighbours. You know, it's designed to make you look delusional, Richie. The program is designed to make you, it's so disgusting and so foul that it's almost too foul to actually believe.
Do you think you'll always be up against that? Do you think that
in America and certain parts of the world, there are psychiatrists that are on the side of the targeted individual community. But slowly, the support is growing, but very, very slowly, mainly in America, I must admit. In the UK, the only support that we have got that TIs have got here in the UK is TI television. There is nothing else. There is nowhere else. You know, you go onto Facebook, then you'll find hundreds of targeted individual related groups on Facebook. You'll find thousands of targeted individuals talking and trying to, you know, it's just explaining what I've just basically explained to you. Some of what I've explained to you.
Yeah.
It's the same everywhere, Richie. It's no different. The program is very, very, and hopefully that's what's going to bring the program down, because it is so stereotypical from TI to TI. Or targeted, I don't like calling us targeted individuals, I like calling us survivors, because we have to survive. I mean, if sometimes, and for a lot of TIs, not so much for me now, but it's life and death. I mean, you're fighting for your life here.
Wasn't it very interesting last year when they introduced this subject to the massively successful television show Better Call Saul? I couldn't believe it. I was watching it with my partner, Caroline. And the Saul, who was Saul Goodman from Breaking Bad, and only if you watched any of this, it might make any sense to you, Shane, but don't worry about it. It's not. I'm not going to in any way confuse you. It's a hugely, hugely successful television show called Breaking Bad, about a man who believes he's dying of cancer, who gets into making drugs, basically. Okay. Hugely successful, violent and exciting and thrilling. There's a spin-off called Better Call Saul, again, massively successful TV show. And in the show, Saul's brother, who is an important character, a very, very big character, he's a hugely successful lawyer, but he hasn't been able to practice for a year or so because he believes he's been targeted. And they introduced that. I've never seen it introduced to mainstream television or to mainstream drama. He believes he's been targeted and that Wi-Fi affects him, and you know that energy pulses are causing him serious problems and illness. But the show deals with it in such a way that the narrative is that the story develops that he's just imagining all of it. And I wonder, why did they introduce that? You know,
well, I wonder where the story writer got it from.
Exactly. And when I brought it up last year, I thought the same thing. You know, where did they? It's quarter to the top of the year. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes left on this. We've covered an enormous amount. It's not happening to you today, thank heavens for that, but people are reaching out to you all the time and they're telling you that what's happening to them.
What we're trying to offer support that for people that are going through the same thing, you know. And just before we finish, you know, I mean, you mentioned about that guy talking about vibration. I mean, there's a very, very dark and sinister side of this targeting program that most people just would not understand, and that's a form of we call it electronic harassment, and it is a very real and a very, very painful sometimes, and very, very to start with when you first start experiencing it, very, very confusing and very worrying, because you just don't know what the hell's. I mean, and I had days where I'd be laying on bed and it feels like I've been electrocuted, you know, just literally the whole like a current running through my body. It was just I don't know what it is. I can't explain what it is. All I can tell you is what I felt. I mean, these are the symptoms. Yeah, it's crazy. Migraine headaches and, you know, tinnitus and volume type tones going up and down in your ears. You know, it's just, you know, I put a short video onto my YouTube channel. So if anybody wants to look at my YouTube channel, just look up Shane Gibbs Targeted Individual and you'll find me. You know, I actually took a short video about back in 2013 when I moved into my mum's house, and the room that I was sleeping in, I couldn't actually stay in there. I couldn't sleep in there because something was something was knocking me off my feet every time I went in the room. So I looked into it and I bought myself a microwave oven engineer's radiation detector that only went off and alarmed when I walked into that room. Now, will you tell me what that is?
Yeah.
It's on the video. It's on my YouTube channel. I don't know what it is, but I know that radiation detector was picking up huge, and it's a detector that microwave engineers use to see if they're leaking radiation.
And you and I could spend hours now talking about the rollout of the space fence, 5G, you know, which a lot of very learned folks and scientific folks are saying that the implications this has even for.
Do you know what, Richie? I am so worried. I'm worried for the young, the generations that are going to be brought up in this garbage. You know what they're turning it into is just absolutely disgusting. You know, I mean, somebody is looking for complete and utter domination and control of this planet.
So could it be then that the electronic stuff that you spoke about, that I spoke to Catherine Horton about twice, I think, the show, could it be that the people who have experienced that around the world in recent years and maybe in recent decades, that was all leading up to the rollout of 5G? Are we looking at guinea pigs? People are being used as guinea pigs.
personally, this is what I believe. I mean, I believe that it's some kind of, I mean, some kind of beta testing program prior to whatever they're thinking about doing. I mean, anybody who does, who's got any doubt about these things actually exist, all you've got to do is Google directed energy weapons, and you will find sheets and sheets and sheets and pages and pages
patents
of
as
this
well
stuff.
And patents, of course,
absolutely tons of it. There's a website you can go on. I mean, because a lot of the attacks are like nausea attacks where they make you feel sick. You know, there's a device you can go onto a website called shomatech.com, and you can buy they class it as a neighbor revenge device. You can buy it for $69, and you can aim this device at one of your neighbors, and it will make them sick.
A neighbor revenge device.
Yes.
Who comes up with shit like that? Just before I give you the final word here, the targeted individual helpline is 0784371254. I'm going to say it again, and I've tweeted it out, and I'll get my mate who looks after the Facebook page, because I'm not on Facebook anymore. I don't have any access to it. Shane's the TI targeted individual phone helpline, TI Television, 0784371254. If you're calling from outside the country, it's +44, drop the 0. 784.
It's manned by another member of TI Television. It's a guy called Tesh.
And it's Tesh. Tesh will answer. You won't get through to Shane. It'll be Tesh who's fielding those calls. Right, we have 40 seconds left max on this, Shane. Thanks for telling us that. It's fascinating, disturbing, worrying, I would imagine, for others who feel that this has happened or is happening to them.
The sad thing is, Richie, that this is real. You know, this is, I mean, you can't make this stuff up. You know, it's absolutely, and this is a life-destroying program that has taken many, many lives up to date. And somebody needs to start looking into it and start acknowledging and accepting that this is actually a reality. Because until that happens, you know, nobody's going to get any, I mean, where's it going to end? Where is it going to end? Until everybody's dead? Everybody's in a mental home?
And just to reiterate, you know, you're not exaggerating when you say 15. You've been in contact and you've come to know 15 people that said enough is enough and God love them.
And they took their own life.
They killed themselves.
Yeah. That's how real this is. They just couldn't take the constant torture, the constant barrage. And it's generally TIs. See, a lot of TIs don't get the electronic harassment. They get a bit of stalking. They get a bit of home invasions. They get a bit of bad service and bits and pieces. You know, there's so many different layers and different levels of TI. You know, and then you get the ones that get the full shebang. They get all the microwave energy weapons. They get the possibly implantation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then when you're dealing with that 24 hours a day, mate, I mean, you do not... You want your life to end. Seriously,
I can't imagine it. Give us the website address again, Shane, and then I'm going to take a break and I'm going to get out. Go ahead.
It's www.ti-television.com.
Ti-television.com.
That's all lowercase. My YouTube account is Shane Gibbs Targeted Individual. You've got the helpline. You know, we've got a flyer campaign. We've got nearly 40,000 flyers that have gone out over the UK about this. And it's just, I mean, what else can we do? I mean, nobody is listening to them. So many people that are all talking about and complaining and reporting, you know, to all over the country, not only this country, but the whole globe.
Well, what's going to be very interesting is because TI Television is still very much in its infancy and because the helpline hasn't been set up that long, it's going to be interesting to talk later in the year, you know, to see what sort of contacts you've received from people. I'll definitely be interested in that, Shane.
Yeah, most certainly. Yeah, I'll come back on and we'll give you an update.
Let's do it. And in the meantime, thanks for candidly sharing your experiences with us. Again, we've tweeted the links out and the phone number out there. This is fascinating.
We have been quite limited with time today, you know, so I've just literally, you've had the glimpse.
Shane, we've had an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That's a lot of time.
Yeah,
we can and we can talk again, but we've had a lot of time. You can't get this onto the BBC, and if you did, you'd be lucky to get 3 minutes. An hour and 50 minutes is a lot of time, and you have to You have to keep people's concentration spans in, take it into account as well. It's a lot of stuff for people to take in this.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. But, mate, I'm really glad you came on. I'm glad I met you, and I look forward to seeing
you. Thank you for inviting me.
Not at all.
It's a first for the UK targeted survivor community to actually have somebody with the balls like yourself to actually allow somebody like myself to come on and talk to you about the targeted individual program that is destroying lives. You know, it's people are killing themselves.
You're very kind to say that, mate, but no, the platform is there specifically for that, to talk about things that other people won't. We'll stay in touch, Shane. We're connected via phone and Skype. Thanks again for doing it, and I look forward to catching up with you later on in the year for updates on how it's all going there. Thanks again.
You're a good man, Richie. Thanks very much.
Not at all, mate. Bye for now. That was Shane Gibbs there, and I've given the number out, and I will give it out again now, and also the website, TI-. Shane, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here, mate.
That website is, give us that website again, TI-.
It's all lowercase, TI-television.com.
Brilliant, mate. Thanks for that. I nearly said it wrong. Cheers, Shane. Bye for now. TI-television.com. If you go to my Twitter page, you'll see the phone number. And like I said, I am going to put the phone number out on Facebook when I get my Facebook guy to do that. And he'll put a link as well to Shane's website. That's just about it for the show. Quick break, back to wrap up.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
England football fans, or England's or English football fans, will be dancing on the sofas this evening. Harry Kane in the 91st minute has sealed a dramatic win for England over the mighty Tunisia. It was 1-1 for quite a time, but Harry Kane, with a brace of goals, makes sure that England start off their World Cup campaign with a win. Good for England. I've never been one of those Irish guys. You know, when Ireland are not involved, I'll always support England. You want England to do well and go deep into the tournament. So I'd be hoping they do well. A lot of younger players in there. I know it's bread and circuses, don't shout at me, but you have to take your pleasures where you can find them. And having a beer, watching a game of football at the weekend, you know, the simple pleasures. So England win 2-1 and start their group very well. Belgium beat Panama in the earlier game. Belgium and England probably will qualify from the group. Thanks again to Shane Gibbs for coming on the programme and talking to us so candidly about what has happened to him. The phone numbers and the website address are now on Twitter. They will be on Facebook soon. A number of our listeners are not convinced. Most have sympathy with Shane and have followed MK Ultra and have followed targeting individuals. Some of her listeners lean towards that, maybe with the best intentions in the world, maybe people like Shane are paranoid and maybe they are imagining it. That is has been tweeted by some of our listeners. I'm not going to ignore that, because that would be wrong. But I have a bit of sympathy for Shane and what he's told us, and others as well. TI-television.com. Check out, find out more about him there and others. We're going to leave the programme right now, because it's time to go. Back with you tomorrow, Tuesday at 7 p.m. UK time. Thanks to Simon Stewart, as usual, for YouTube management. Thanks to my mate Jean-Anne and Cleggan for sage advice on making programmes and on talking points and topics and all the rest of it. Going to leave you with some Bruce the Boss Springsteen.
The Richie Allen Show.
That's not Bruce. This is Bruce. Monday, Monday. Press the wrong button right there. See you tomorrow. Look after yourselves and one another. This is beautiful. Bye now.